historic weekend, no matter what happens.
Training standards will increase, expectations will increase. I just can't go against Ballyhale.
The Club Championship Show. Subscribe to the GAA podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
I'm delighted to say Mark Lawrence is with us. Mark, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm all good, thank you. You?
Yeah, pretty good. Yesterday, when we were previewing this game, we had your former mucker, Phil Thompson, on, and we kind of actually more talked about the historical significance of games at the San Siro for Liverpool than previewing this game, because it felt like it was going to be a routine victory for Liverpool. And I just talking about it earlier, we take it for granted a little bit just how amazing this Liverpool team are, where they go to the San Siro, they win 2-0, and it's kind of no big deal.
Yeah, and didn't really play particularly well, but obviously defended extremely well. It's just the expectation levels as well. But I think the first time in since Klopp's been there, it's he's got everybody fit. Maybe Joe Gomez is still carrying a knock and he's not around. But all of the other players that he's got a chance to pick from, they're all fit and ready. Obviously, Jota got injured yesterday, so it remains to be seen what's happening to him. But that's unusual in football. Even, you know, with these teams with big squads, you normally like one or two missing at the very least. But he's now got an embarrassment of riches. I thought Konate was outstanding last night as well for him. So that's another problem. Does he bring Matic back at the weekend? He's got lots of problems, but his problems are selection problems in a good way, not in a bad way.
I think the other thing that we're seeing is the Thiago signing, there was a bit of a handbrake on it. Because of injury, because of COVID, because of a bunch of different reasons and the players around him. Now you can see that he can bring Thiago on to change the shape of a game and to change what the team are trying to do. So it gives him an in-game opportunity to be a completely different team in some respects.
Yeah, he's my favourite player, Thiago. I mean, socks down. Just so aware of everything on the pitch. He's got radar, his passing's fabulous. He's got a little bit of a nasty streak in him as well, which I like. And he just, as you say, gives him a completely different dimension. And you can tell all the players love him as well. And, you know, that midfield now, where we're looking at the start of the season, maybe it needed a little bit of strengthening. I mean, you know, there's so many different players. And different players in terms of they've got different attributes as well, as you rightly say, with Thiago, etc. So it's a great time for Liverpool.
Like, when you talk about that depth, Mark, I think, obviously, Liverpool could never afford to lose Virgil van Dijk last season.
No.
But it was also all the other injuries around the midfield, around the rest of the defence that, I guess, tripped Liverpool up more than van Dijk alone would have done last season. So if, and hopefully this doesn't happen, but if there are injuries between now and the end of the season and there is a busy schedule still coming up, you do feel that level of depth is there for them to actually cover that pretty well this time.
Yeah, and you know, when you really look back at that season, and obviously all the centre-backs were missing, etc. But I think the biggest single problem was that Fabinho was taken out of midfield to go and play at the back, and basically Klopp didn't have many other options. And Fabinho's just in that position, he's been outstanding. He just cleans up anybody's mess all the time. He sits in front of, you know, the two centre-backs as well, and it gives them real strength. It allows the full-backs to push on all the time, as we know, and he's become a really, really key player for Liverpool.
James Milner made his 800th appearance of a senior club career last night. I mean, it's an absolutely ridiculous number. This late stage of James Milner, this stage where we're still kind of talking about him potentially starting in the team. I think was it David Myler on the show the other day actually predicted that Milner would actually start last night. To what extent do you feel that like the culture at the club, allied with Milner's own hunger to continue to succeed, to what extent is it Klopp and the management there? How much have they managed to get the best out of Milner over the last little while and to keep this going?
Well, they've obviously got lots out of him, but I mean, it comes from within this, and you know, he's been in the game so long. The great thing about Milner for me was when he was at Manchester City, he could have stayed there and earned more money, but not really play many games. And he said, no chance. I just want to go somewhere where I want to play, which is why he signed for Liverpool. And he's playing so many different positions. He's just got a great attitude to the game. Doesn't drink, I don't think. I think he lives a really healthy life, which is obviously why he's still playing. Loved by everybody. And he's just an absolute, you know, when all these young players are coming through, your Harvey thingies of the world and everything, And, you know, they must look at him and think, oh, my goodness, this fella's still playing and I've just played like 10 or 15 games, whatever it is. And to reach 800 is in this day and age is phenomenal. But the U-Tays takes on board everything about, you know, about your diet, about the way that you live and stuff. And he can play left back, central midfield, left side midfield, right side midfield, right back if you wanted him to. So it's a great advantage for Klopp. And also, he's just there all the time, isn't he? And, you know, people just need to look at him and think, crikey, 800 games. That's just, as I said, that's incredible achievement.
It's obviously hugely important to be able to get some players through the system, like the Harvey Elliotts of the world, because it saves you transfer fees.
But it's money, yeah.
I guess also more important than that, it just makes sure that everybody at the club believes that they're part of it, that the youth team believes they can make it. So there's that pathway there. But I guess even more important is that when you recruit well, and that you do, when you have that big transfer fee and you spent the money, the players fit in. Luis Diaz has like walked into the club and looks like he's been there for three or four seasons. That's very unusual.
Yeah. The only problem with Luis Diaz when he walked in the club, he was just covered in Adidas, wasn't he? I don't know if you saw the picture when he met Klopp. He was covered in Adidas from head to foot. I don't think the sponsors were particularly pleased. Much as soon got that stuff off his back. I was at the game. Which one was it? I always forget now. The other week, and when he made his debut, his full debut, and not when he came on as a sub, and the fans took to him straight away. He did a couple of things where, you know, predominantly right-footed, plays on the left, but that dribbled down on with his left foot, got a few crosses in, etc. Went into tackles, chased back, and it just seems that he's got it straight away as what's expected of him. But the other thing about the transfer policy, if you really look at it, apart from obviously Van Dijk and the goalkeeper, who were you know, relative fortunes in when they signed. Most of Liverpool and Klopp signings have been between kind of 30 and 40 million quid. There's a whole host of them, as we know. And so what they're really looking at, they're looking at good players already, but not, you know, great players as such. And what they're doing with these players is they're taking them from, you know, really good players into outstanding and world-class players. And it's a really good way of doing your business. And I would say, apart from the goalkeeper that he took on a whim from Germany, that's basically cost us in the Champions League final, all the players that he signed, he's improved them all. And for a coach, basically, it doesn't get any better than that. He's not only improved them all, he's also as well obviously improved the value. And I think with the, you know, with the academy and everything, as you're right to say, once one or two are, you know, Curtis Jones is another one. It's one or two of them are coming through. Obviously, Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's great. It's great for the coaches at that level because they go, look, this is what you can do, but it saves the club money. But also, what you can do as well is you can get some players who come in. Nat Phillips, who came in when they were struggling for centre-backs and did really, really well. Now he's gone to Bournemouth on loan and they'll sell him. And they'll sell him for big money. I mean, this is something that Arsene Wenger arguably was one of the first to do. It was that he'd bring really promising players through, play them in the first team, and then make a decision which would be, you know what, they're not actually at Champions League level, and I don't think they will be. But then people would come in to buy them, and he'd go, well, hold on a minute, he's played 15 games in the Premier League, and they just hike up the price. So they hike up the price, the money comes in, and it improves the academy even more, and it's Liverpool have kind of logged on to that in the last two or three years, and you know, some of the sales have been outstanding.
And there's obviously been a lot of talk about Liverpool's recruitment, their talent identification, and how they managed to keep getting hits in the transfer market. But from what you're saying there, it's stating the obvious here, but Jurgen Klopp is still the vital cog in all of that. He is still the guy who is taking this prospect and ensuring that they do reach their potential.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, obviously I've met him quite a few times and he's, what you see is what you get. But I do get the impression with him that, you know, he will wake up one morning and just say, right, I've done that. And, you know, whatever his contract is, I just think he's that kind of person. I think he absolutely loves his job. And I think the morning that he wakes up and thinks, I've probably done enough, I've had enough or whatever, is the day he'll probably walk away. And everyone goes, oh, yeah, he'll go manage Germany and all that. I don't think he will, actually, but that obviously remains to be seen. And hopefully that's years away yet.
Well, we were talking about this. Go on.
Yeah, I was literally just about to make that point with the conversation we were having earlier on. Like, do you think that last season and the difficulties of last season have, I guess, given Klopp a greater appetite for this job?
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely, because he just wants to, you know, win football games as you want to do and as he needs to do. But, yeah, and, you know, it's the thing about football nowadays as well, you've got to manage up. You know, the days of just managing the team and the results, they've all gone. So you've got to manage up. You've got to, you know, whatever the owners want, generally, you're going to have to try and give it to them. And the great thing for Liverpool is that FSG, who own the football club and have the sporting franchise, obviously, in America, they know what happens in sports, big-time sport, where, you know, you sign guys and some don't make it, so it costs you an awful lot of money, or you can bring, you know, kids through from the lower ranks, and that's a bonus. But also injuries, loss of form, all those kind of things. I mean, they're hardly ever seen, the three guys who own FSG are hardly ever seen at the football club. But it doesn't make any difference, you know, because they're running it from afar and then they run it extremely well. The only bollock they dropped, basically, excuse my French, was the furlough thing when that happened. But they soon rectified it, thank goodness. But they've been great for Klopp, you know, and he obviously gets on really, really well with them. But he doesn't generally have that much to do with them. There's an American, Billy, who's in the kind of chief exec of the club at the moment. He's a really nice fella. And he's, you know, his relationship with Klopp is outstanding as well. And you can see what they're doing is now, it's a completely different football club, because they're not just thinking of the next 6 months or the next 12 months. It's like 18 months, 2 months, and on and on and on. And I suppose from their point of view, one day they will probably sell the football club, but it will be sold for billions, not hundreds of millions.
Well, that's the thing, right? Klopp is the goose that laid the golden egg in all of this. So we've seen the transfer deficit over the last 10 years figure, the billion figure that's due in the rounds for Manchester United. But just on transfer market, for the last 5 years, the transfer deficit that Liverpool have is almost exactly the same as, who else was it there, as West Ham. So it's 197 million for both of them, right? But then you look at the other clubs who have spent more, and it's like now Newcastle are ahead of them, Arsenal are ahead of them, Villa are ahead of them. They're in the same kind of ballpark as Wolves and Brighton. It's an incredible level of management that Klopp has managed to build a Champions League and Premier League winning squad. Everybody else is trying it, but nobody else is doing it. And like, they're half the money that, or less than half the money that Man United and City have spent on deficit in that period of time. It's all Klopp. Like,
yeah, it's the plan, isn't it? It's a master plan. And I don't, you know, look at Manchester United, and, you know, fabulous club and the size of it. But you look at the transfers, there's no plan, is there? I mean, I was there on Tuesday night at the game, and, you know, in all honesty, Brighton were better than Man United until, obviously, the boy got sent off for Brighton. But there doesn't seem any great plan with their transfers in or transfers out. And Liverpool, I mean, Michael Edwards, I don't know if he's actually left yet, head of recruitment, or leaving, but supposedly his number two has been with him for however many years and knows exactly kind of how it works. But that, you know, I bore you with it all the time, that the second most important job at any football club now in the Premier League is recruitment, because if you get it wrong, you're in trouble. Look at Madrid, look at Barcelona, and those kind of clubs. And they've got financial problems, but their recruitment's been poor over the last few years, and it is absolutely the key. And that's very much Klopp. And, you know, I mean, it's like a 24 hours a day job. I mean, I'm sure he does sleep well, because obviously the results are really, really good, and it makes such a difference. But all the time, you know, it's not just taking training and that's it, and wave goodbye to the boys at 1 o'clock and at lunchtime, and then, you know, nip home and have a bit of lunch and stuff. It literally is 24 hours a day, and, you know, it's tiring. Plus, the amount of media stuff these guys now have to do day in, day out, and no, you know, if you clock, nobody else wants to hear from his assistant, do they? No. They just want to hear, from him. And so, but, you know, he's. He deals with absolutely everything. I just sense a little bit this year he's not been quite as kind of open and maybe funny as he used to be. But that's probably just the designs on his time, etc., being the manager of, you know, very successful Premier League club.
Well, then maybe everybody should enjoy each of these moments and not take for granted a routine 2-0 win against a brilliant Inter team, and actually think that this isn't going to last forever. Because, you know, again, you look at Man United and that cycle they're in at the moment looks like it's going to be very difficult to break. I do want to talk about Spurs briefly here with you. Spurs net transfer money is actually bigger than Liverpool's over the last 5 years. But Antonio Conte has given an interview to Sky Italia, which obviously blew up Romelu Lukaku's relationship with Chelsea before Christmas. So, Conte says, this is just a snippet of it, the full thing's going out tonight. What happened in January was not easy. We lost four players in January, four important players for Tottenham, and we brought in only two. So even in terms of numbers, rather than reinforce the squad, we on paper weakened it. Betancourt and Kozlewski, ideal prospects for Spurs because Spurs are seeking young players they can develop and grow, not players who are ready. This is the issue. This is the vision and the philosophy of the club. It's inevitable that if you want to grow quicker and if you want to be competitive more rapidly, you need players with a lot of experience because they also raise the experience level at the overall team. But I repeat, I have realised now that this is the vision of the club. Is it a bit late to be realising it now?
just slightly. He's a boy, isn't he, Conte? He doesn't hold back. Look, I mean, as everybody knows with Tottenham, the great thing, or the real problem, was the stadium, which is absolutely brilliant, is costing them fortunes. You know, you can imagine the amount of money that they borrowed against building the stadium, and that's why, in terms of the transfer market, that they're particularly low. Look, I think every single manager at this level are always two players short. It's always, you know, go to the chairman or the chief exec. I just need these two more players, the chairman, it'll make all the difference and stuff like that. But look, I think Conte's only signed for 18 months anyway, hasn't he? So I would think, you know, if you're the football club, you're thinking just quick fix and then you get a new manager. But have they got a plan? Have they got a plan for when Conte goes? I would probably, the way looking at them, the way they run at the moment, probably no in terms of a new manager. So it's just the football club. It's their problems, and Conte's obviously making, because they've had a few defeats as well lately, and of course that's always worse for the manager. But you just look at Tottenham, you just think perennially, if you know, they might get fifth and they might get sixth, but you don't look at them thinking they're going to win all sorts of trophies anytime soon. And then what happens to Harry Kane again this summer? Is he going this summer? So it's just a football club. It's a great football club, fantastic as a stadium, but the inner machinations of their club are not particularly good.
If you're Kane listening to this, and the manager is saying the vision of the club is to sign young players, improve them, well, like, you know, what's the point of that? It's really to sell them on.
Yeah.
You're thinking, well, hang on a second. I made a big thing about trying to win trophies, and Conte came in and he started to, oh yeah, actually maybe I could stay. But surely he's looking at this and going, right, I'm out of here now. That's it.
I would have thought so. I don't think there's anything else you can take from it, looking at that as well. So, it's just a strange thing with Tottenham is I always feel sometimes that, you know, they think they are better than they are. You know, but they aren't, because what have they done? What have they done in the last few years? All right, I mean, they got to the Champions League final, didn't they? But apart from that, it's nothing. So if you're Kane, I'm thinking end of the season, what do you do? Do you go in and knock on the door again and say, right, you know what, we're going nowhere. I stay for an extra year. Let me go, and maybe this is the time when they will let him go. But then it's a case of what you're going to do with the money, and who's going to be in charge of the football club anyway. And you just look at it, and you cannot keep having lots of managers. It just really seriously does not work, because, you know, the manager comes in, brings his players. Manager gets sacked. New manager comes in, doesn't want the players of the previous manager. He buys it. He goes and gets his. You know, and it just goes on and on and on and on, and it just doesn't work.
If you're Daniel Levy or Joe Lewis reading this, do you think, well, actually, now that you've got it, that's great, you're going to be our manager for the next couple of years? Or are you thinking, that's a bit disloyal, we need to start looking for the next manager?
Well, they've already lost one this year, so you would think, you know, you'd probably think, I would think, with the amount of people that Joe Lewis has done business with and met in his life, probably thinks, well, he's had his moan. Let's just say to him, look, get your head down, start winning games for the football club, and we take it from there. And Daniel Levy, well, you know, Daniel Levy runs a club, and you know, when I spoke to someone who knows him quite well, and I said, what's he like? And he said, well, in terms of a deal, he wouldn't give you a crumb off a plate, which is absolutely fine, but has that really worked? It might have worked in terms of they might be cutting down the debt every week, but they're not really improving the football club, are they?
There's also then the whole other level of Conte's relationship with Paratici, and that was supposedly one of the reasons why Conte was brought in, because of the relationship that they enjoyed. And like, it's interesting just kind of looking back at some of the reporting that was done at the start of the window, because they were linked, just an article that linked them with Kulusevski, who they do eventually sign. It was reported in Calcio Mercato that Conte was less enthusiastic than Paratici about Kulusevski. So there's probably a whole element here as well of signings that are being made that Conte isn't fully sold on top of the fact that he feels that he hasn't got a big enough war chest.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really, really fair point. But then I suppose Conte's thinking, well, you know, I'll take the player anyway because, you know, we might be able to improve him, and it's another body, isn't it? So I think the fact that he signed, I'm pretty sure it's an 18-month contract, isn't it? Is that right? Or have I misread that somewhere? I just thought it was an 18-month contract, and I kind of thought, that tells you a lot, doesn't it? Which I think with Conte is, if he doesn't like it one morning, I think he'll wake up and say, you know what, boys, thanks, but no thanks. And it doesn't particularly help the football club. But then they've allowed him to sign an 18-month contract. So you would hope they therefore have got another plan if he walks away from it. But you would just never know.